one of the other things that's in the news today, and that I would love to know what people think about it, is the Leaving Cert, because the NCCA, the National Council for Curriculum and Assessment, have come out and said that the Leaving Cert should have a more vocational focus to give more real work-based experience to students. And that is according to a review of the senior cycle, and that was organised by the OECD. And the review has been taken out in consultation with thousands of students and hundreds of teachers and parents and stakeholders. And the senior cycle currently have options in place for students who do want practical experience around the Leaving Cert, the applied Leaving Cert and transition year. But they're saying it's not enough, that actually kids should be out doing other things. And by kids, I don't mean children. Adolescents should be out doing other things, putting their toe in the water, seeing what they like by way of work. I think this is sort of along the same lines as when we hear them talking about that we should be encouraging people into apprenticeships and all of those things, that the skills set that we're churning out of schools isn't quite appropriate. But 53106, I'd love to know what you think. And Michelle is on the line. Michelle, you're a teacher. Would you think that more experience, work experience within the Leaving Cert curriculum would be a good thing? You're very welcome.
Thank you. I suppose it would depend on the work experience. Like, I am a science teacher, so if I think it would be fantastic if, we'll say, students get the opportunity to work in a lab and get a certain skill set, like general skills, it would be brilliant. But like, if they're only going on work experience to see, do I like this or do I not like it, it's obviously that's very, very important as well. But it's just, I don't know how you'd regulate it. And that, they're depending on where you go to. Like, some students might go to one company and get like really hands-on work experience, and other people then mightn't get the same. So it's very hard to know how you'd view that. But like, the big thing really is that students need to be able to communicate. The way, like, they're learning it from a book, that's the way the exam is asking it, that they're just learning it off, rote learning. That, to me, even if they have to be able to make the phone call to get the work experience themselves, like, that is good. The way in that, like, communication is a huge problem in schools at the moment, that it's one of the key skills in the workforce, but we are not teaching them the skills for that. Like, we're doing our best, as you'd say, but again, when it's not being examined, like, you're under pressure from students and parents to, well, that's not going to be examined, so it's not as relevant as.
And are you talking about their ability to speak publicly or to engage with adults, say, at 15, 16, that kind of thing?
Yeah, as in to be able to, like, even we'll say with the agricultural science exam at the moment, there was a 25% oral exam. No, there is, problems with that. It wasn't, every student wasn't examined and so on. But, like, the students got 10, 15 minutes to talk about their project and the work that they've done. And, as in, it was great that in class then that you could be spending time working on those key skills for communication. And they learn loads from other people in the classroom. But if that's gone, like, if you're not examining, if there's not going to be oral exams, be it in Irish or French or whatever the case is, like, we're going to lose those key skills that we already have, that we're trying to include in the classroom. So I just feel like I think it would be good, as you'd say, if they could go out and get work experience, but
you're not sure that's the most. My concern about it, I don't know enough about curriculum setting, but my concern about it is I know up until recently there was the idea that, say, for the junior cycle, that history was going to be optional, and then they've decided to make it mandatory and all of those things. And that's part of that thrust towards making people come out of school with more practical skills, and history was seen as a bit esoteric. But I think that there should be core pillars to a well-rounded education, including history, including geography. And yes, I agree with what you're saying. They should be able to come out and talk and communicate and express themselves. But does that not happen already through maybe debates in class, or the civics class, or the CPSE, or those types of classroom settings where they discuss ideas or issues or social, I suppose, change, those types of things?
Absolutely. But again, it depends on your class. The reason, you'll have some classes that will thrive on that situation, and that, they'll work really, really well. Even like, I read a debate last week with my third years. Some were for antibiotics and some were against antibiotics, and they had to go and research that. And even if they didn't believe in it, they had to stay.
I remember being made argue the point you didn't believe in, which was quite a valuable exercise, actually.
Yeah, that you have to, and that's really, really good. But I think, like we'll say, if you're talking from a Leaving Cert point of view, you know, like we're teaching it. Now you try and make it as relevant for them. But like if I'm a chemistry teacher, so if they could get into a lab and like see the skills that they need in a lab, you know, as in, and that those skills are transferable, being whatever industry, whatever chemical industry you're into, that would be absolutely fantastic. Like, we don't have the skill set to, we can show it to them, we can show them how the different machines work, like a mass spectrometer. But if they had the opportunity, but then again, industry have to be available, and then it depends on where you're
and there's insurance issues and the, you know,
all that.
Yeah. Would it be better? I'm trying to think about this because, am I right in thinking that there are aspects of the curriculum across the board in all areas that could be revisited and changed? I'm thinking even going back as far as primary school. My youngest is in fourth class, and one of the things that they are learning to do and have been learning to do for a while now is write with a fountain pen. I couldn't think of a greater waste of time that they are learning for weeks and weeks and weeks how to write with a fountain pen that they are never going to write with. I can understand it was a throwback to the day when, if you were a bit posh, maybe you had one, if you grew up to be the local solicitor or something. But sure, who cares? People write with ballpoint pens. Now, teach them nice handwriting with that, maybe. But this thing is some kind of an anachronism. And is that carried through, Michelle, to secondary school? Little blind spots of it's always been done like this and it's a stupid waste of time, but we're still doing it.
We're still doing it, yeah. And I think, well, what I feel even with the current junior cert is there are some really good options to it, you know, as in, but again, it's so vague in that it depends from school to school what's happening. Like, some schools are doing it really, really well. Other schools then aren't doing it, you know, as well. They're only covering the basics, as you'd say. And I know you have to try and get something that's a standard across the board, but again, it depends on your location, what's available to you. Like, you know, have you people that can come into the school, you know, experts, as you'd say, and some schools are very lucky and some schools don't. So it's just, I know they're, like, the NCC are trying to make it that it's standardized, but I would just fear that if they are saying, like, that it's more of a vocation, that they have to do work experience, that again it just becomes a tick the box exercise, and that you're just doing it because you have to do it, rather than what can we actually learn from it and what can we, you know, can we build on this, or, you know,
would there be an argument, before I let you go, changing transition year round? I know that they generally speaking do, I think it's, I've had a few kids go through transition year, I think it's two-week sets of work experience, or 2 1-week sets anyway.
Or some people then go one day, they go a day a week, you know, the way they do it, they might go to a place for 6 weeks.
What about doing 3 monthly blocks, or, you know, like actually long bits of work experience, that actually when they're there they become slightly useful, to rather than just because I think they're mostly observational if you're going in somewhere for a week or two. If they had a month somewhere, they could actually learn the ropes and maybe, you know, contribute. And if they'd had 3 different types of work experience, maybe office based, some other kind of physical work, you know, different things. Is that when we should be doing it, rather than doing it in fifth and sixth year?
Well, I just think fifth and sixth year, like, their Leaving Cert is really important. And I think we need to get this right before anything is implemented, you know, as in that it's not just, we'll try it and see how it goes.
Yeah.
That's not fair on someone going into fifth year. You know, the way is in that that the teachers don't know really what's happening, the students don't know. Like, you know, I think it's just, that adds way more stress on both teachers, students, parents, because when they don't, you know, we all have a fear of the unknown. So again, like, you could trial it in transition year and see what, does it work, and get feedback. But again, I think it shouldn't be something that's rushed or that, you know, you know, because it is, like, it could be very, very valuable to students, but you don't want, we'll say that next thing, it's 10 years down the line and you're saying we made a mistake, and it's not fair on those 10 groups that have done their
I suppose they do pilot things. I remember when I did it was Intercert in those days, we did a thing called ISKIP science. It was not the normal science curriculum for the Intercert. It was a modern version of it. I suspect it was a dumbing down of it, because I remember my science teacher giving out to me when I left my Intercert science exam after 30 minutes, which was as soon as you were allowed leave. And he goes, "What are you doing? I thought you'd do well. I thought you were going to do well." And I said, "I finished the paper." And he goes, "You couldn't have." And I said, "Not only have I finished it, and I've read it twice. And I did do well in it." Like, so I think it was, simplified science, to be honest. But they rolled that out as a pilot to various classes and to see if it works. I don't know if it was kept or if it was binned, but they do that though, don't they? They do pilot exercises.
Oh yeah, they do pilot, and even like last year, we'll say they piloted about that for the senior cycle science that there would be a practical element to it. You know, that students would be assessed how they could actually carry out an experiment, their skill set basically.
Yeah.
But again, it's all going to come down to cost.
Oh, like everything else, Michelle, I hear you. But look, thank you for that. It's great to have the insight from a teacher. Michelle is a chemistry teacher. She would like to see work experience, but how do you standardise it so that maybe some people don't necessarily, some people might get great work experience in a lab somewhere, for example, and other people would get not so good work experience. And is that fair if you want a level playing field? Hard to know how to approach this. David is also on the line. David, what do you think about this idea of work experience for Leaving Cert?
I do think it's a good idea, but as has been pointed out, the practicalities of it in local areas, particularly small towns and so forth, all over the place. But I'd be more inclined to actually ask the question, what's the Leaving Cert for? It appears at the moment that the Leaving Cert is just the entrance exam for college.
I agree with you.
Not prepared. It's not preparing children, young people, young adults, some of them, for life.
No.
And the way around that, I think, is to introduce a new subject called, call it what you like, but basically life skills, financial management, home economics, technology, maybe even get Leaving Cert students to do their theory tests for driving, to have it done before they leave school, right?
That's a brilliant, I actually totally agree with you, because one of the things I don't like about them is they all come out and they can't boil an egg and therefore they can't feed themselves, and then they're buying TV dinners or whatever they're called nowadays, and they're you know what I mean, they're de-skilled, and you're absolutely right. But does it need to be happening for the Leaving Cert? Could, like, we have transition year now, could that not be what transition year is? It's life skills, it's work experience, it's those types of things. Would that not be the right place to put it?
It would if transition year was compulsory for everybody. But some schools don't do it. Some schools don't allow all their students to do it. Some
That's
schools
true.
Don't have the facilities for all of the students to do it. So they're almost doing an entering exam in their junior cert for transition year the following year. So if you want to structure transition year in such a way that it is compulsory, there's an exam at the end of it, perfect way to do it would be to introduce this into the life skills. And there's no point in saying, oh, parents should be teaching them how to boil an egg. There's a lot of technological stuff and the theory tests and various other bits and pieces that we never did.
Yeah, true enough.
I would also, if you were going to go down the route of trying to make the Leaving Cert practical, the GASCA, the President's Award,
yes.
I think that's a fabulous thing and it should be nearly compulsory. Right? Now, again, the schools will moan, we don't have the facilities for doing it, but you'd have to put all this in place. Sports should be another thing. Again, I'm not necessarily talking about GAA or rugby, something. The physical and mental benefits from doing
I agree
something.
With you.
Even your 100 days of walking. But to log it, to actually say, yes, you know what, I have set myself up, I'm going to be the tiddlywink champion of Ireland. It doesn't matter what they're doing, so long as they're doing something. And all of this should be added together. And at the end of transition year, if that's the way you want to go, it's an exam. That they have to have done the 100 days of working or played the GAA match or hiked up a mountain.
Or gone dancing or whatever. Like we could find... everybody...
Yeah.
Like I was, to be fair, David, I was brutal at sports. But, you know, I could have done a bit of aerobics or something. You know, I could have done stuff and I would have done stuff and I did do stuff. But but like not everybody is a dab hand with a football. So you could have horses for courses, couldn't you?
Exactly. But you have to have a broad range of it. They must. If a child has an interest in something, I know I used the tiddlywinks example, but if a child has an interest in something, then the education system should be in a position to be able to turn that interest into, well, tiddlywinks, oh, why do you like that? Well, would you write an essay on that? Well, okay, let's do the English and go through it that way. You know, walk it around. Now, that does take a huge amount of time from teachers, I accept that, but that's how you get it. The current system we have suits about 75% of the students. Because it's been used as an entrance exam to college. The rest of them are falling down. And they're not leaving, they're not getting their potential challenged in secondary school because the 25% that are left are the messers, the jokers at the back of the class, the ones that don't turn up in the morning, all of that sort of stuff. But if transition year was compulsory and there was an exam at the end of it to say, right, have you done the following things? Have you done your GASCA? Have you done your sports? Have you attended a wellness
Yeah.
Days where we looked at mental and physical health.
I feel we're missing a trick. I do agree. I feel we're missing a trick that we could round them out. Like, and I know it's not everyone's point of view, and I don't necessarily think I'm right or I'm wrong on this, but my point of view is I think they spend throughout their school education too much time on religion. And I think if you freed up some of that, because I've no problem with people being religious, but I'm not sure that school is where that should be delivered, you know, all things considered. I think there are other things, like you said, life skills that, to be fair, would stand to them a little better. But anyway, look, thank you. Thank you, David. Infinite sense. All our listeners. Rocks a sense. 53106. What do you think should happen to the Leaving Cert curriculum? There's calls for it to become more work experience based to give kids, I suppose, a better understanding of the world when they come out of school. Is that what you'd like to see happen? Are there other things you'd like to see too? Mark's on the line. Mark, you used to find transition year students very useful. Tell me how you used them, as it were.
I did, Ciara, and I must agree 100% with your previous caller. What I used to do, I used to run a bookshop and used to sell school books, which, as you know, the back-to-school rush is fairly mental in August, September. So I used to use transition year as a way of seeing what sort of people would work out as part-time staff during the summer, and I'd be quite happy to employ them afterwards.
Yeah.
You start to get a feel for them in 2 weeks in a retail environment, how they can cope with sort of dealing with customers and be able to talk face-to-face. My reservation about transition year, at least, or work experience at Leaving Cert, is people say 15 and 16 years of age, when they're making their choices for TY or Leaving Cert, have to decide on what subjects they're going to do, which ultimately will be for their third level college places,
yeah.
By which stage work experience is going to be far too late for them. If they're given that opportunity at TY level, it may put them in a direction they hadn't thought of before, and you know, they might just find being able to speak to customers, they could do better in sales, customer services, being able to talk to people. Practicalities of labs with GDPR and sort of highly sensitive material being available for work experience,
yeah,
might not be a start.
I think TY is the ideal thing, because the junior cycle, I also think, could be hollowed out a bit from some of the stuff and different things put in. But they are very young then to be putting them into the workforce, not least for the workplace, that having, you know, essentially children there, 13, 14 years of age, might be tricky, you know, because adult environments maybe aren't entirely suitable for them. But once they get to transition year and they're about 16, maybe some of them are nearly 17, they are young adults, and that year, I think, could be an absolute gift in terms of what they achieve coming out of it, life skills, driving tests, all that stuff.
Well, absolutely, and even fluency in another language other than all this time wasted from teaching Irish, which sort of evaporates once you leave the school gates. This whole league table thing in schools bothers me as well, that it's based on how many kids go to third level education.
Yeah.
I think a child who's actually managed to go off and sort of reach their full potential. I mean, a lot of people go to college because of what their parents do. Their parents are in professions, that's their expectation.
Yep.
It's no less of an achievement for some child, say, coming from a third generation of long-term unemployed, to go to college. That's a far greater achievement.
Completely.
Than just somebody who happens to go to college because of the funding from their parents and their expectations.
Yeah, no, I'm inclined to agree with you. I suppose, you know, we talked before about the league tables of universities and what went into them. And it isn't in no way a reflection, from what I could gather, of good teaching on campus. It's to do with published things and all this, because you measure what's measurable. And some of the things around a good, well-rounded education are not measurable. They're intangible. And, you know what I mean? So yeah. Going to college is measurable, and that's why we use it. But it, as you say, that may not be the yardstick for every kid either.
Not at all. We're all different. Not everyone's good at languages. Not everyone's good at sports. Not everyone's academic.
Yeah, yeah. Look, thank you for that. You're absolutely right, Mark. Great sense been talked on air today. Someone says, you should have asked the teacher, Ciara, should schools start earlier and finish later? That's an interesting thought. Or even in view of what Kevin Humphreys said this morning on Breakfast about staggering start times for businesses, he was suggesting, in order to facilitate traffic. What? Teenagers' circadian rhythms are naturally later than ours as adults. So they naturally don't get going in their head spaces till about 11 o'clock in the morning. Should school start later? You know when you go and you drive into to work in the summer months and the schools are off and everyone goes, God, the traffic is great. Maybe that's something worth considering. I do think changing the public sector on start times would be easier. because the government has leverage than small businesses trying to do it. And someone says, Kira, writing with a fountain pen teaches children how to write properly, and there is a measurable improvement in the way they write with a regular biro afterwards. It's a brilliant way of improving handwriting. Sinead, I just see it as a big mess of cartridges and everything, and they'll never write with it. Could you not teach it with ballpoint pens and just teach them how to write nicely with a ballpoint pen? 5306, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there are calligraphers out there pulling their hair out talking to me. Let's take a break. We'll come back with more on Leaving Cert and indeed on Fostering Week after this. Now, you're very welcome back to Lunchtime Live with Kira here on News Talk. We have been talking about those calls to change the Leaving Cert curriculum and make it more work experience based. Would you be on for that? Do you have kids doing the Leaving Cert? Did you do the Leaving Cert recently yourselves? And you're kind of thinking, geez, half of what I did was a waste of time. 53106 is the text line at a cost of 30 cent. I'd love to hear from you. Someone says, Kira, it's not up to the children's parents to teach these skills. Is it not up to the children's parents to teach these skills? School is for academic learning, not to be taught how to boil an egg. If parents can't teach these basics to their own children, they are failing as parents. It's a cop out on parents saying that these skills should be taught in schools. And that's from Enda in Rathgar. And I hear what you're saying, except for we know that they're coming out not learning it. And as a society, if parents aren't doing it, do we not as a state have to deliver it through a way of, like, we deliver vaccines through schools. We deliver all sorts of, we deliver religion currently through schools. We deliver all sorts of things through schools that are not purely academic. And maybe we should be looking at what is very important to the kids, which is that they know how to feed themselves and cope in the real world. 53106. And Isabel is on the line. Isabel, should students, in your view, get more practical experience at school? You're very welcome.
Thanks very much. Yeah, I think that they should. We used to have two different types of schools. We used to have secondary and vocational, or techs as people call them. But there's no difference between the two of them now. They both offer very practical subjects. But like your that tech said, you know, it's not up to the school to teach them to boil an egg, but that's actually where most of them learn how to boil an egg.
Well, it kind of is, isn't it?
It is, yeah. But they learn those practical skills. If they could come out being able to feed themselves and mind themselves, they'd be doing well. But the issue of work experience, they hate doing, I teach, so I know kids hate doing work experience.
Do they?
They hate it, Jim. But what they hate is getting it, because they can't make a phone call, because they've never had to make a phone call in their life. So you can have an 18-year-old come out with 7, what are they now, H1s, and they can't make a phone call. They can't make a doctor's appointment. They couldn't possibly go in somewhere and ask for something. And that's ridiculous.
Well, it is ridiculous. And do you think it's really that bad? I mean, I actually make my kids do certain amounts of things. Like, I'll make them go into a shop and ask for, you know, I make them do things because I think, God, lads, you have to learn to do it at some stage.
Well, so do I. But, I mean, my children are at primary school, but I still see sixth class kids and their parents carrying their bags to the door of the school. Mm. You know, they're too babied. And if you're tough on them in school, their parents will complain. They say that's not your place to say that, and you know, you need to mind them and don't be hurting their feelings and all that stuff. But you get, they're coming out like idiots, basically. And then they have to go to college, and which is why you see a huge dropout in first year in college, because they just can't cope.
Yeah, yeah.
They go from the cosseted world of secondary school and the cosseted home, possibly.
And why do you think the cosseted thing came in? Because, you know, I was talking about this yesterday with a pal on Facebook, to be honest, because she posted a picture. It was a kind of a joke about Brexit, but it was the old, do you remember the old Ready Breck ads from the, I don't know, the 80s? And the kid was glowing. He was like radioactive because he had eaten his Ready Breck. But what I thought from the ad was this kid was about 10 and was walking along by himself in the lashings of rain going to school. And then he went into a train station and then he got on a train and then he, and like, you'd never see a 10-year-old doing these things now. And
yeah,
yet that was normal. No, I know,
but
it doesn't do them harm.
You'll get a 3 or 4-year-old in Tokyo, go the whole way across Tokyo with his little school bag on his back. And that's the norm. So the norm for our society now is to mind them to the best, which is fine. But there's a line that comes in it. Like, I have a 10-year-old. He's ASD. And I'd send him off up to the counter to get something. It might take him half an hour to get it, but he can do it.
Yeah.
And he can get his breakfast and he can pack his bag. But I suppose he possibly can pack it, but he never manages to pack it.
Yeah, but you're trying to give him some skills.
Yeah, but you're empowering. And I actually met a parent this week and their child won't go to school. And as I talked to them, I realised, like, there's nothing educationally wrong with you. You know, you've no learning difficulty. You can read, you can write, a good home. There's no reason at all for you not to go to school. You just don't want to go. And the child's excuse was that they were lonely, which is fair enough. Maybe they are lonely. But I said it to her, you have to make friends. They don't just come. Life doesn't come to you. You have to go and do it for yourself.
Yeah.
And it was like a shock to her. And a lovely, lovely kid, and I hope that she does make friends and everything. There's no reason that she wouldn't. But they don't, children in school, they don't have to be called children either, but they don't want to do it themselves.
Okay.
So if you said to them, ring an employer there and set up a meeting, they'd be like, oh no, God no, I can't do that. Can you do it for me? Rather than them not do the work experience, schools have, I suppose, fallen into the thing of you'll have a work experience facilitator or coordinator, and they'll set up all that stuff for them.
Yeah, but can I ask you, because Isabel, you're a parent, but you're also a teacher and you've experience of all this. What's changed? Certainly when you or I were young, we were sent out the door and on you go on your bike or under your own steam and off you go to school. You were made do a lot of stuff for yourself. And somewhere along the way, we've stopped as parents thinking that was the right thing to do. I was told about one of my children when he was in first class. The teacher was in one of those parent-teacher meetings, and the teacher said to me, your ex-child, he makes his own lunch. And I said, yeah, he does. He's young. He has older siblings. They were making their lunch and he kind of rode in with it. And she says, do you not think he's a bit young for that? And I went
to them.
Yeah. And I said, no, I don't actually. But she clearly did. And she kind of intimated I wasn't given enough TLC if I wasn't making his lunch, even though the lunch was harmless. It was a few chopped up cucumbers and a bit of peanut butter on bread or whatever it was. And so
it's a huge thing. You're not minding them enough. It was a public perception. I know plenty of people have said to me, you're really hard on your kids. And I go, I'm not. They're well minded and well cared for. I just, pushing them out a little bit, they're in my sight, I can see them, and I'm like, off you go now, do it yourself. Yeah. All my children make their lunch, don't eat it if I make it anyway, they complain about it.
What is it though that we've moved towards thinking that unless a child is being wrapped in cotton wool that they're not being cared for adequately? What is that?
Is it societal pressure?
There's
definitely a perceived danger to children in society, and there's no more danger there than there was.
Yeah, I agree with you, to be honest. I actually think it's good for kids and I think it's empowering for kids. And what's more, I think it teaches them resilience. You learn resilience through small challenges, through overcoming small challenges.
Empowering them. My 9-year-old asked, could she go around the back of the estate with a little buddy the other day? And I said, yeah. And then her father came in and said, I told her to ask you because I presumed you'd say no.
Ah.
And I said, but you let her. I told her, yeah, go, but you have to stay together and you have to come back together.
But sure, we were all out in housing estates roaming the roads of them when we were 3 and 4 and 5 and 6.
Yeah, we were running across bales in the countryside and trying to kill each other with them. But and we're fine. We're all still alive.
We are. And in fairness, we learned from doing those things. Look, thank you, Isabel. I think you're preaching to the choir in me. But 5, 3, 1, 6 are myself and Isabel off the wall here. I think kids should be doing more. I think we don't do them any favours by making them think that they're not capable of doing things that they're perfectly capable of doing. They're completely capable of doing. And yet we kind of act as if they're infants when they're 16. We're like, oh, the poor baby nearly. And they're in other countries, they'd be having a job. Now, I'm not suggesting child labour is the way to go. But what I am saying is, do we actually do our kids any favours by telling them that they're not able to walk a couple of hundred yards up the road or make a lunch or those things? Is that a good thing? I'm not sure that it is. Mary's on the line. Mary, you want to tell me about a great local programme that you know of with Transition Year Students. You're very welcome.
Yeah, good afternoon, Kira. Now, I hope my reception is okay because I'm
You're
not
perfect,
in a good area.
Mary. You're perfect.
But where I'm living now, I won't identify the school because I don't have the permission, you know, of the principal.
No bother.
But in where I'm living, it's a big co-ed school, state of the art. It's just built a number of years ago and the 509 pupils in it.
Good.
And they have a thing going every Tuesday morning for 2 hours where the older people in the community go in and meet the transition year students. So there's 90 of them. So there might be 6 people at a table. And 1 week, like, we had to take in photographs of our childhood and they looked at them and they picked the ones they liked. And then, you know, we talk to them about whether they're interested in sport or what they're going to do, you know, for their work experience, all this kind of thing. It kind of ties in with the history thing. But I travelled to Vietnam in 2008, and I took in photographs of the trip to Vietnam and the Cootey tunnels and all of this. They didn't know anything about it, and they were absolutely fascinated.
Right. And this is just your local school. They've set up a partnership with retirees or something in the community.
They've been doing this for a good number of years, but this is my first year because I've only moved to the area recently. But it's wonderful. The children, or I shouldn't call them children, the students meet you at the door. But just so respectful and welcoming. And then we go into the room and we sit with a table of about six people. And they're just so fascinated by the olden times. One girl said to me, oh, I'd love to have lived in those days.
Really? Jesus, she doesn't know what she's wishing for, I'd say, now, to be fair.
And then, like, for example, they were doing some artwork, you know, to put the photos that they had chosen. And I said to one of the students, could you do it in calligraphy? Now, I'm not at all creative myself. And they didn't know what calligraphy was. But the following week, one of the girls had come back and had figured it.
Really? And she'd learned a bit of calligraphy online or something?
She decided. Do you know what I mean? And, and they never mentioned a phone, and they never mentioned broadband or any of that.
Yeah.
And they just, you know.
They're like sponges at that. Yeah, they're like sponges at that age as well, Mary. And the world is something they're interested in.
Yeah, well, I kind of thought initially, Kira, going in there, oh my God, you know, they're going to be bored. Like, I'm 65, and a lot of the other people that come with me would be older than that.
Yeah.
But they're not one bit, they're absolutely, and they're learning from us, and we're learning from them.
It's nice. It's a nice social engagement in the community too, and I presume if you...
Well, it gets them to interact with people on a face-to-face, like you were saying, to have a conversation on a face-to-face basis.
Yeah, conversation is a skill in of itself. Being able to talk is a skill, and a very important one. And if you want to talk about the value of work experience, some of that is absolutely part of it, the value of engagement. Thank you for that, Mary. That sounds like a great shout out to that school. I know you didn't want to name it, but it does sound like a great shout out. 53106, we've been talking about, should there be more practical aspects to the Leaving Cert curriculum? I'd love to know what you think. We did kick off the show, though, talking about Leaving Certs and maybe the need for reform and whether or not they should be more experience-based. It should be more work experience-based, and loads of people get involved. Someone says, Kira, I was at the sideline before a match last week. I saw a mother tying the laces on her 11-year-old. Then he took off and jumped in with the rest of the lads. Not only should she have been embarrassed, but he should have been embarrassed too. Maybe he's dyspraxic or something, give him, I suppose. People doing their best. And Stuart is on the line. Stuart, you want to get in on the chats about building real-life experience into the Leaving Cert, but you have got a better idea, I believe. Explain. You're very welcome.
Hi, Kerry. Yes, thanks for letting me on the show. So to answer your question about should we put work experience onto the Leaving Cert cycle, my answer simply is no. The Leaving Cert has enough tagged onto it, and for all its flaws, it is a fair system. And I think the answer is twofold. And one, we're doing quite okay already, and one would answer the question of dealing with all of the problems that all of your listeners have been identifying there. Is national service.
Ooh.
So once you finish your Leaving Cert cycle, or even if you don't, and you're happy with school after your junior cycle, do national service. And there's countless examples across Europe, the first world, all across the Western society, of national service being very, very effective. You can join the army, the navy, the fire brigades, the ambulance service, the civil defence. Like, if you're not into, you know, the military, that's fine. There's plenty of other national service sort of parts out there of Irish society that you can get involved in. And if you join the army, for example, the skills you learn in either a 6 or, let's say, 12-month national service contract that you do, trust me, you will learn very, very fast how to clean, how to polish, how to iron, how to cook, how to time manage, how to deal with all of the things that you might not necessarily have been handled or handed in school, such as resilience or teamwork or all of those things. And I said it to the researcher there, like, the added bonus when you come out the far side after serving in one of these national institutions is a huge sense of pride, of national pride. And I think that's how you could tap off the Leaving Cert cycle. Instead of tagging all of these, you know, work experience or missing elements of children's you know, their development onto the leaving cert cycle. The school is full of teachers, you know, they're academics, you know, handing them practical responsibilities for children who are possibly isn't the best solution. But at the end, before you go to college, you have a year to do this national service. And trust me, that will round off your edges and give you all of the life skills you need.
There was talk of this, as I recall, a couple of years ago, because I'm sure we talked about it on the show, that somebody did, in fact, suggest it as an idea. But I think there was all sorts of problems, as there is with everything here, with insurance and stuff like that. So you're suggesting do what they do, and they do it in continental Europe and various countries. Pop into the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Ambulance Corps, whatever, for a period of time. Would they be paid, or would they be working for buttons or nothing at all?
No, you would be getting paid the equivalent of what someone entering that service would normally. And you get paid for your time. Most of the time, you'll even be housed and fed. So depending on which service you enter, you'd be getting the equivalent of, you'd be getting the equivalent of someone entering year one. You know what I mean? You won't be paid very much. But you'll be paid enough to survive, like anyone, like any adult entering employment. For sure, this isn't slave labor. You know, absolutely. You know, these people will get paid. And that's what I'd be suggesting. And I think that this does pop its head up from time to time, and people are very easy, you know, to shoot it down and all that sort of stuff. But the practicalities of these does have its challenges. Yeah. But the biggest challenge is for the moral courage of politicians to make this happen.
Do you think it's likely? I wouldn't see it happening, Stuart. I'm sorry, I'm going to let you go only because your line is kind of unraveling on us in terms of being able to hear you. But thank you. National Service, we'll talk about that another day on the show for sure, because there's always quite an interesting debate to be had around it. Mark's also on the line. Mark, on the subject of students learning life skills, you have a young businessman in your house, is that right?
I do indeed, Ciara. How are you?
How's it going?
Yeah, I do. I have a young lad. I was listening to some of your callers there, and it was the lady, one of your previous callers there, was talking about children not being able to converse and not being able to order things or whatever. And I agree totally with her. You know, I find that children in general at the moment, they're not able to converse with adults. They're not able to order their own food. They're not able to go and do their own thing. Thankfully, I have a young lad, Alfie is his name, and at the age of 12, he decided he wanted to set up his own business. So I said, well, what is it? And he said, I want to set up a popcorn business. So I said, well, what are you going to do? And he said, well, I'll Google. And he did, and he found himself a popcorn cart up the north. My wife drove him up, and he purchased it with his own confirmation money. And he said, right, he said, I'll advertise it locally. Now, it is only local. So he did up a poster, and he advertises his popcorn cart for kids' birthday parties, kids' events, communions, and whatever else.
I'm kind of semi-blown away. He did this when with his confirmation money, so he was about 12, 13.
Yeah, exactly. He said, this is what I want to do. I had no part with, not that I didn't want to. I just said, well, follow it up. And he did. And he found a company up the north that was selling the little popcorn carts. And he went up with my wife and he purchased one. And the chap who actually sold it to him, he was so taken aback by his age. I think he took €100 or whatever off the price of it.
And does he make a few quid?
He does indeed. Yeah, absolutely. He did a wedding there during the summer. Now, my wife and I obviously vet whoever is looking for him. And
that's fair.
Yeah, he has an email address. So he doesn't have his phone number on his poster or his business card. So it's basically alfiespopcornkinvara@gmail.com. That's where we live. And so any emails that come in, we can vet them and we can advise them how to answer them. They're generally all right, and it's they're genuine people looking for him, and off he goes. He charges per the hour, and unless he's doing a community event, he charges per carton of popcorn. And he has his own credit union account. He puts the money into it, and he's buying himself an iPhone 8 because his old phone is damaged.
I'm blown away, and I think you've done something very right. Although I sometimes think people like your son, Alfie, who do these amazing things, that there's some spark in them, that you could teach kids work experience till you were blue in the face in school and you still won't necessarily produce an Alfie. I think there's some spark in some people. Is he unusual in other ways? Is he exceptional in other ways?
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree with you on that one. He's a very independent young man. We've brought both our children. I've an older daughter who's up in college in Dublin, and we brought both of them up to be independent. And one thing my wife and I instill in them is to be able to speak to people and to be able to speak to adults in particular.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You know, and I find children lack that nowadays, and they sit there with their head buried in their lap, whereas with my two children, I make sure that they get up and they offer their hand if somebody approaches them to, to introduce themselves.
I do. You're doing something very right. Look, thank you for coming on and speaking to me, Mark. Fantastic stuff from Alfie. Think about what he said. Independent kids, awful lot to be said for them. Let's take a break. Gary O'Hanlon will be back answering food questions next.